Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. We start with the good and from a couple of unlikely sources, although one of them is a fairly straight shooter, and that's Ron Fournier, formerly of the Associated Press, now the National Journal. He's been a fairly regular panelist as of late on Special Report with Brett Baer, and yesterday, since the president once again addressed the possibility that he'll try to go it alone on dealing with the current immigration crisis, many of the different folks on the panel weighed in on that. Fournier among them. Here's what he had to say.
Let's assume for a second that legally he can do this. Just stipulate that just for a second. Should he do it? And even if you agree like I do that we really need to do something about these 12 million people who are in the shadows, even if you believe that, and even if you believe it's legal, I still think there's an argument to be made, and I would make it, that he should not do it. Because the fundamental reason he became president was he was promising there's no red state, there's no blue state, I'm going to bring the country together. He's been a polarizing president, and this would be a nuclear bomb. Blow open and make this country even more divided in a way that most Americans just don't want.
On top of that, Jim, the Washington Post, while saying it sympathizes with Obama's frustration with Congress, also believes that going it alone on unilateral action would be the wrong way to go. So hearing some voices that might normally be pretty sympathetic with the president going the way of conservatives here, good news.
Here's why this is a good martini. I don't think Obama cares that much what Ron Fournier thinks or what the Washington Post editorial board thinks. Both of them have become increasingly critical as Obama's presidency stretches on. And we don't see any significant change in his behavior or decision-making or comments or anything like that. What's useful is that Ron Fournier and the Washington Post editorial board are now seeing Obama for who he is and what he is. And one of the things, you know, the whole thing about no red states or blue states, look, it was all an act. It was all a sham. You know, he knew that he could not, if you run as a diehard leftist, you get Dennis Kucinich numbers. If you may sound very moderate and sensible and all that stuff, some say we should do this path on the right. Some say we should do this path on the left. But I take this sensible course that sounds like it's in the middle, but it's actually pretty far to the left. Then, you know, he does fine. What we're seeing with here, I like the metaphor a nuclear bomb. And maybe that kind of, you know, will break through this kind of bubble of arrogance around this White House that, whatever you think of the immigration issue, if there are 11 million people here in the country illegally, you cannot add 11 million American citizens or 5 million or 6 million or however many he thinks are going to be covered by this with the stroke of a pen because of the whim of one man. There are very strong debates about this. It's kind of an unnerving but I think pretty smart discussion between Guy Benson and Ala Pundit of Hot Air yesterday, debating whether Obama could pardon some portion of the 11 million or perhaps all 11 million and whether the president has that kind of authority. The Constitution gives the president pretty broad authority in terms of issuing these sorts of pardons. And if you'd say, well, he can't just do it for everybody, a blanket pardon for everyone, there was the issue of the draft dodgers. So the president has issued these sorts of things for Americans in the past. The question is whether he can effectively create citizenship for people like that. Because at that point, you know, theoretically, a president could make every Canadian a U.S. citizen if they wanted to. I mean, this is really tearing apart our vision of the constitutional checks and balances on the president. And that's who Obama is. You know, this accusation that wants to be a dictator, it sounds hyperbolic and crazy. But functionally, he wants to get what he wants to get, and he doesn't care how he gets it, which is what separates traditional American politics from radicalism. You know, in our system of government, it used to matter how you did something. And even if you had the best goal in the whole wide world, if you subvert the Constitution to do it, no, that's not okay. Well, here we are today. So I'm glad Fournier and the Washington Post editorial board are waking up. Hopefully their objections will be strong enough that the White House will recognize the potential consequences for this. I do think this would turn the midterms into from a bad year for Democrats into a potentially catastrophic one. And you're hearing some centrist Democrats saying they don't like this talk of this move. So we'll see what happens. Glad to see people are waking up to it. The question is, will this be enough of a deterrent for a president who's in his second term and clearly doesn't really care what history thinks of him?
Back to this topic, sort of, in the crazy martini. On to the bad martini now, which, as usual, is brought to you by violence in the Middle East and horrific violence at that on two fronts. Nina Shea, writing a National Review Online with a just horrific account of what's going on with ISIS and the persecution of Christians and other religious minorities in the area that they now claim as part of some sort of caliphate. Here's just one brief report that she cites in her report. Yesterday, and this was written yesterday, so this is probably from Tuesday, 45 children died of thirst. Some families throw their children from the top of Sinjar Mountain in order not to see them die from hunger or thirst or not be taken by the terrorists. 1,500 men were killed in front of their wives and families. 50 old men died also from thirst and illness. More than 70 girls and women, including Christians, were taken, raped, and being captured and sold. More than 100 families are captured in Tel Afar Airport, and there's 50 other families near Sinjar that they have no idea what happened to them because ISIS overran the town. In response, Samantha Power over at the UN says, "We urge all parties to the conflict to allow safe access to the United Nations and its partners so they can deliver life-saving humanitarian assistance, including to those families encircled by ISIS on Mount Sinjar." As if that approach weren't hands-offish enough, the president was asked about the ongoing Israeli-Hamas conflict, and here's what he had to say about that at a press conference on Wednesday.
"I also think it is important to remember that Hamas acts extraordinarily irresponsibly when it is deliberately citing rocket launchers in population centers."
As Charles Krauthammer pointed out last night, you could call it irresponsible. You could also call it a heinous war crime. So, Jim, the kind of hands-off approach here, not winning a lot of points for this administration, and a lot of people are suffering as a result.
Yeah, it's kind of been the theme of some of my writing lately and just kind of an observation that you see from a lot of commentators, anybody who's bothering to pay attention to the news, really the whole summer. We are seeing acts of terror and acts of just horrible brutality seeming to multiply with disturbing regularity. And, you know, whether it's ISIS and this, you know, 10,000 to 40,000 people starving to death, and we can all see it. Now, by the way, right before we came on to do this podcast, Greg, apparently the Pentagon is reviewing options for somehow airdropping aid to those people. So perhaps we will, you know, get up off the sideline and do something to help people who are suffering. But you throw in ISIS and their actions, and they're literally crucifying people in the Middle East again. They are religiously cleansing the area. We've all forgotten about the pro-Russian separatists shooting down the Malaysian airliner. Taliban sleeper agent killed our major general. There's no shortage of really horrible things happening in the world, in the sense that our government is just, you know, off duty. We just don't want to deal with these problems, and so we're going to issue these kind of boilerplate statements that you get from Samantha Power, and that we won't not actually take any action to change any of the facts on the ground. And so when Obama says Hamas is extraordinarily irresponsible, you know, teenage drivers can be extraordinarily irresponsible. You know, it just seems like if only Obama spoke about ISIS or Hamas or these Russian separatists or any one of these groups that are just, you know, doing, you know, the Taliban, if only he spoke with them with like half the contempt he brings to his comments about Republican leaders in Congress, or, you know, climate change skeptics or something like that. I mean, we know what this guy cares about. And you know, really horrible acts of brutality overseas are not something that really bothers the president. They aren't something to get the blood pumping and get his dander up, so to speak. And I think it shows. And I think that when the U.S. is as unresponsive as it is, you know, some people say, oh, this is warmongering, we can't intervene everywhere. No, but, you know, we have a lot of cruise missiles. You know, we can send one here and there to kind of remind people in this world that we are still out there. You know, what would happen if we blew up a bunch of ISIS guys? I think it would make the world a better place. But we're not in that business anymore. And we will see. Now we're seeing the fruits of this. We live in a more dangerous and chaotic world in which every evildoer from one side of the hemisphere to the other basically knows the U.S. is not on duty anymore, and it's just a question of what they can get away with.
And so, what are Democrats focused on right now? It's apparently pretending that Republicans want to impeach the president and have concrete plans to do so as we head into our crazy martini. There was a report out last week that the talk of impeachment was exponentially higher on MSNBC than any other cable network, and now we're seeing the same thing with actual lawmakers. This is from The Hill. Congressional Democrats have talked about the impeachment of President Obama 20 times more than Republicans have on the House and Senate floors. Since the start of the 113th Congress last year, Democrats have used the word impeach or impeachment regarding Obama 86 times. Utterances on the floor from Republicans have been relatively rare. Only three Republicans in this Congress have raised the subject on the House floor. And so it's almost as if they're trying to grease the skids for the president to do something big and bold on the immigration legalization front. And that ties back into the first martini a little bit, Jim. But of course, the media will run with the one Republican. And Mike Huckabee was the one this week who suggested that the president has probably done some things worthy of impeachment, but he didn't actually go and say we should impeach him. So as long as there's that one Republican out there, the media will run with that, even though Democrats are the ones fanning the flames here.
Yeah, I mean, this is not exactly a surprising study. What's kind of, you know, makes this a crazy martini is that it works so effectively. Two separate issues to debate here. The first is, does Obama deserve impeachment? And I think that's you and I could have a very lengthy and fascinating discussion about that. But the question of will impeachment happen is a much shorter discussion. It's because the answer is no. And, you know, why is that the case? Because Democrats will never vote to impeach Obama. And as a result of that, they're not going to have the number of votes in Congress to do so. Now, if Republicans had the votes, then maybe it'd be a more interesting discussion. And we'd really have perhaps our third and most fascinating discussion of the day, Greg, which would be, would it be worth it if you put the country in the hands of President Biden? I mean, you can live with a lot of high crimes and misdemeanors to avoid that option. sure, the president went on the killing spree, but it wasn't that bad. So now we have this set of circumstances in which the Democrats are pretty obviously scaremongering of, oh, remember how bad 1998 was? There go those crazy Republicans again. I don't know how much the general public really buys into that. But one thing that's really fascinating is the Democratic base totally buys into this. And their fundraising emails are doing phenomenally successful because of this. And there's like 14 in a row that are all about impeachment and all capital letters and stuff like that. You know, they raised $4.8 million in a week talking about red alert because of impeachment and all that stuff. So the cynicism works, and it's a very strange and depressing set of circumstances. It may just be the Democratic, you know, fundraising email list. Like the people on that list are looking for an excuse to give to the Democrats. And hearing that, oh, crazy Republicans are coming to impeach him might just be the right button to press. And it may seem more about them than it does about our politics as a whole.
Fun day. so many different levels. Jim, have a good day. Hopefully tomorrow will be better news.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.